Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 136. That's right. We're climbing in episode numbers and running out of year. It's not what? Let's see. One, two. Well, if we don't get lazy and don't do a Thanksgiving show. One, two, three. We got five shows left for this year.
Wow.
Where the hell did 2012 go? That's right. I'm not, for those of you that are newer listeners to the show, I'm not a slave driver. I've given these guys the holidays off, although Glacinator and I are probably going to do, or are probably going to be during our Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving next week when we do a show. Who knows? I just may show up plowed out of my mind. You won't get the show till like fucking Monday. sorry, Roger. Well, hey, I it's Roger and it's either Pat or G. I know when I do these show or when I edit the show and get the audio posted Thursday night that there's at least two diehard definite people that pick it up by the time I get up the next morning. And I know one of them's usually Roger, the other one's either Pat or G. And a lot of times it's Pat because he's got to listen to something while he's delivering the mail. And he might as well listen to us blabbering since he doesn't do the show anymore. Joining me this week, as always, is Glacinator.
Yep, hello. Still here, as usual.
Rewriting art history in a way you'd never thought possible. also joining us this week, as he always does, he tried to throw a 360 controller through his entertainment center a few minutes ago. Sorry you missed that. We were recording. It's John.
It's Thursday. Never could get the hang of Thursdays.
Yeah, it's that I was having that problem about lunchtime today. It's like, oh, shit. Isn't it Friday night yet? I woke up in one of those moods where I had no energy to start with, still had X amount of things to do, you know what I'm talking about? And the mountain just starts looking bigger and bigger because when you don't start with any energy, you're kind of screwed from the word go. I think that was your last Thursday, wasn't it? That's why we ended up recording on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That was a shit day.
Yeah, they happen.
Yeah.
Which one of you fine gentlemen wants to go first with what you've been playing?
I can go. I don't have a whole lot to talk about, so.
That's good, because I may or may not run the show far too long on what we've been playing by the time I'm done with Assassin's Creed 3. So why don't you go ahead and take off, John?
All right. Some of the usual favorites. I played some Rock Band, of course. It doesn't seem like a week goes by that I don't play a couple of songs on that with Wanda. This week being no different. So I've also been playing some more Rayman Jungle Run. My son Peter, 2.5-year-old Peter, is a big fan of Rayman Jungle Run, and he constantly gets to a point where Rayman doesn't die, but Peter says, "Oh, Rayman got hurt. Daddy, help!" And so he gives me the phone, and I help him get past it, whatever part it might be. And but yeah, I'm really enjoying Jungle Run. I like how I won't talk too much about it, but how it progresses from it trains you in how to be a jumper, and then it goes into flying with the propeller, with your ear, I guess it's ears, you have a helicopter propeller, and then you get into the wall running, and then the punching. And I've finished everything but the punching section of levels. But I must say, I really enjoy the progression, and you feel like you're getting better all the time. And boy, is it ever addictive to go back and try to get all those little yellow floaty things. I still don't know. They don't tell you what the name of these things are in the game at all. Like, there's no direction of what's going on, other than it's just a series of levels. There's no story. There's nothing really, but just let you go and play. But yeah, it's still super addictive. I think it's a great value for, you know, if you want to play it. I've said on Twitter it's becoming one of my favorite games on the iPhone. So definitely pick it up. It's a beautiful game. You know, go for it. So speaking of the phone, correct me if I'm wrong. So I won't talk about it if I already have. But did we talk about Smart Glass last week?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I downloaded the Xbox Smart Glass app for my phone, which turns your phone basically, from what I've done so far, into a remote control for your Xbox. Now, I know with some games there's supposed to be some extra content, so you end up having like a second screen thing going on. I presume in a game like maybe Halo 4, I know it has some connectivity. Maybe you get a map on your phone and you can put on your lap and you can look down or, you know, some. I really haven't looked it up enough to tell you what all the features are in other games, but what I've used it so far has been for Netflix, and which is pretty good because you can basically control whatever you want to do. So skipping. Playing, stopping. Now, I have a Kinect, which allows me to do all this stuff by voice command as well. But so, you know, maybe the Netflix controller is not so much for me, but it's still a cool little thing that you can have. And I think there's a lot of potential if there's actually some good connectivity with other games. Getting it to connect the first time was a bit of a hassle. For some reason, through my own Wi-Fi, for the longest time, it just would not do it, and I had to end up having to reboot my router and my phone, and I guess the fresh connection kind of helped things out. I could that's a little bit of a lie. I did do that, but before I connected via Wi-Fi, I connected using the 3G, which we don't have 4G here in Newfoundland, but once I made that initial connection, then it was just fine over Wi-Fi after that. So, and there's no lag, and it's you know responsive right away as it should be. The 3G had a little bit of lag, I guess, because I guess you know it's really kind of traveling a little further than my own internal Wi-Fi network. But it's pretty cool. You can flip through the different options, so you can see what your friends are doing and send messages back and forth. You can go into your avatar, into the avatar store, and you know dress up your avatar, all that kind of stuff. And then the fourth page, you know the way the phone always has, you know, lets you flip through pages. The last page is kind of like a preview section that lets you check in to the different games and stuff that are available. You can look at your achievements and all that kind of. It's all that little, you know, Xbox stuff. At least on the dashboard, so to speak, kind of thing. But I know there's connectivity with Dance Central 2, and I'm curious to see what it actually does. And I haven't really done my homework to tell you exactly what all those things are, but it seems like a cool little app. And then finally, as I mentioned on Twitter a couple of times, I figured out how to get my PS3 remote to hook it up to my computer via USB and use it as a gamepad for my computer. And I've complained lots of times here on the show about how I'm not much of a PC gamer. I've kind of gotten into the groove a little bit with a couple of games, but you know, I still prefer the controller. So getting this to hook up without having to go out and buy a proper Xbox controller is pretty cool. The little piece of software, if everybody online will bear with me for a second, it's called Motion Joy is the software. From what I understand, it's a little Chinese company who put this out, and what it does, it installs these drivers onto your computer, and you can choose the various setups, so you can have it as a generic gamepad. No matter what controller you have, you can do it. You can if you can hook it up, you can use a PlayStation 1, 2, or 3, I guess, if you had the connections. But, of course, this is USB, so it's more straightforward. You can also do it by Bluetooth as well. Anyway, back to what I was trying to say. I've tried to do this before, and it wouldn't work, and I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. But I noticed that they updated the software a little bit, and now they have this option for the drivers to make the controller emulate an Xbox 360 controller. So, because when I first tried it out and I loaded up Steam and I loaded up Portal 1, I could look around with the left analog stick, like left and right, that axis, but I couldn't look up and down. So, but I could move the mouse and do it. So I knew something was going on. But once I turned on the emulator, everything worked really, really like just perfectly right away. Like I could, you know, full range of motion. The buttons worked as they should. You know, it was just like playing It's just like playing on a console at home, which is exactly what I or at home. You hear what I said? like playing on a console, and it was, you know, very natural and great.
Do you often take your consoles out to the public park? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Yeah, I have my PC in the backyard and
load it up in the car and use a converter or use a not cut.
My cigarette lighter port to hook it up. But anyway, I got it to work, and so I was very happy about that. So and then one of the first things I did was I booted up Super Crate Box on Steam, which is free to play. I think I mentioned before, and because I wanted to see how, because I really hate the virtual controls on the iPhone for that game, because you need precise movement. So once I had a D-pad and a button to press, I got the 10 crates, no problem. I did it. I got 10 crates again, unlocked a bunch of shit, and I was like, screw you, iOS. I'm not playing that game on there anymore. So I'm going to delete that from there. And if I'm going to play it, I'll play it on my computer. But back to Portal. One thing I have noticed about some games that I have, even though I have a new PC and a decent monitor, I've been seeing a lot of screen tearing, and screen tearing means that if you look around, there's these lines on the image, so like a wall will suddenly shift a little bit, and then when you stop, it comes back and sync again. There's an option that I didn't realize there was available. It's called VSync or Vertical Sync, and I have it's an NVIDIA card that I have, and once I had that selected, and even in the game it asks you if you want to activate it. Once I did, all that screen tearing went away, and my movement is what I see is perfectly clear and smooth, and I, like I said on Twitter, it's a whole new ball field now, a whole new ball field now. Did I actually say that? A whole new ball game. It's a whole new ball game because now I'm actually very interested now to play some more computer game PC games, and things that are, you know, kind of things that are exclusive to PC that I can use a controller for. Yeah, so, you know, thumbs up. I can't wait to play some more. So I took a few things for a test drive other than Portal. I tried a variety of things. I tried the Witcher 1 and 2. I tried Far Cry 2, Metro 2033, which was really bad for a bit of stuttering, and again the screen tearing was smooth, and I turned the graphics quality down one small notch as well, and it's just like I'm playing it on my Xbox. Quantum Conundrum, I took it for another little run, and it was smooth. So I'm really happy with that, and so hopefully if I get a light a fire under my ass, I'll have a few more PC things to talk about here on the show in the future. And that's it.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. I'd really like to try Smart Glass, but Motorola has decided that my Droid 3 and one of their other phones is incapable of running the latest Android OS known as Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah.
And I'm not close enough to an upgrade or to a get a new phone date to root the bastard and mod it. I mean, unlike Apple, who tries to, you know, Nazi everything possible about jailbreaking their phones, even though they're jailbroke 10 seconds after they come out, you know, Android encourages that. I just really don't want to be dicking around with my everyday phone like I have with the little iPhone 3GS I've got. That thing's jailbroken, modded to the damn moon. I mean, I can play N64 emulators on the fucking thing. Actually, I can play them on my Droid too, but anyway, so I'm a little pissed off at Motorola right now because it's like, really? This phone's only a year fucking old and I cannot use Smart Glass.
That's pretty sad.
Stupid. The other thing, when you told me about that, it was actually kind of comical, and I'll get to that more in what I've been playing, because when you and I were talking in Facebook,
mm-hmm.
during that whole stretch where you were telling me about the PS3 thing, and I didn't want to tell you, because I always feel rude if I go, okay, this is fun talking to you and all, but I gotta go. Because, like, during, and so I never do it, I never do it to you, to Pat, to G, to Glace. I just keep right on time. And I was talking to you on my phone while I was playing Assassin's Creed, and I was in the middle of being chased while on a mission. So I'm talking to you like I'd pause the game. I'd talk to you. Okay, John, unpause the game, run some more. Oh, John's talking to me again. Pause the game. Talk to John for a sec. Really happy for you, bud. You know, and so like if I sounded like a scatterbrained idiot or like I wasn't that interested, it had zero to do with the fact I was really interested because I was happy for you. And I'll get to why in just a quick sec. But it literally was like, pause this, do this. And here's the funny thing. It's like it distracted me because I perfect that fucking mission. Like, I got all the secondary objectives as you could do, and it was literally like 10 seconds of the mission, talk to John. 10 seconds of the mission, talk to John. It was the greatest thing ever. But here's what pisses me off about that. So you can emulate a PS3 controller to act like an Xbox controller on a Windows-based PC, and you're golden. You can't get a fucking standard Xbox 360 controller to work with the USB cord that comes with it. You know, if you buy the charger pack, which I always do because I don't want to fuck with AAA batteries and I don't want to fuck with their chargeable batteries like Pat does, any of which is acceptable alternatives. You know, it's just pretty classic Microsoft because they have Sony tendencies too. You'd think that'd be something Sony would do, but in reality, you know, so it's nice to know because like right now I think a USB, just a wired controller is like $35 360 controller for PC. And it's getting to the point now where the only way you can get the USB connector, the correct connector, is if you buy a new 360 wireless controller. I can still find the adapter on Amazon, but it's getting to the point where it's coming from sketchier and sketchier sellers. It's not from Amazon itself. So, I mean, here's the thing. I'd love to see a study done about how much what we like and don't like in controller schemes is perception and how much of it's reality. Because, like, you know, you're talking about iOS controls with Super Crate Box, and I have yet to play that one yet, but I've played ones that are similar to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I found repetition is the only way for me to get used to touchscreen controls. Just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. But it sounds like it's something more with you. To me, and I told you this on Facebook, it sounds like to me like Pat is with a mouse and keyboard. It's just not possible for him to get used to a mouse and keyboard. It's just not in him. And I think in a way, that makes me happy I was a PC gamer to begin with. Because the reality is a console controller is pretty easy to get used to. You know, I had a few rough moments in the original Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which was my first game when I bought my 360 in 07, you know, not being used to triggers and all that stuff. But it was much easier for me to catch on to that than it is mouse and keyboard. But I sincerely think there's just certain concepts as gamers and as humans that we're just never going to get. There's no shame in it. But I'm starting to see that I think that in each of us, there's just certain, and I'd love to see research on that. Is it our perception? Is it we're not trying enough? Or is it that we're just simply not wired to be able to handle certain things? You know, because the iOS controls, I tell you what, if you seriously wanted to learn how to do the iOS controls, the touchscreen stuff, you know, the virtual D-pad, go play Resident Evil 4. If you can make yourself suffer through Resident Evil 4 on iOS to a good portion of the game, you will actually learn how to use that D-pad. But I would not recommend it to anybody because I was about batshit eaten insane by the time I finally figured those controls out. But yeah, Smart Glass, again, and it's a problem I have with some commentators right now. Smart Glass, much like Kinect, much like Move, much like the Wiimote was with the original Wii, it's first generation. I'm really curious what it's going to have for us next generation or the next console. Like, Smart Glass is one of the reasons I'm thinking about getting a Nexus 7, the Google Android tablet.
Mm-hmm.
because I have this feeling smart glass is going to be really cool for the next Xbox. You know, I mean, it's obviously not only one of a bazillion reasons why I'm thinking about getting a Google tablet. A, I don't want to give Apple that kind of money. B, because I don't have that much use for a tablet. But B, I want one. You know, so like I can sit here during the show and flip through, you know, Facebook and all the stuff we need to do and not have to worry about monkeying with anything else. And it's a little 7-inch tablet. But so I could see huge potential for smart glass. Need to get somebody to download it on it. Well, you downloaded it on iOS. I need to find somebody with a fucking Android phone that it works on. Get them to. It's not smart glass's fault. It's Motorola being dickheads. Between that and crappy battery, I'm about done with Motorola. I think I'm, unless Apple sued them into bankruptcy, I think I'm going Samsung next time. Samsung or the Nokia Lumia line, one of the two. Because I'm pretty sure I'm going to stay. I'm pretty sure I'm going to stay with Android, but still. But I'm glad you found something that'll work for you on PC gaming, because to find a way for you to really enjoy PC gaming the way I do is awesome to me, and not for me, but for you. Because yeah. I know you got a lot of games that you could get a lot of fun out of. The only thing I'm a little concerned about is some of the games that I know you own, there may not be enough buttons on the PS controller. No, because that is a legitimate problem.
There's limited space. And it's not that I can't use a mouse and keyboard. I just there's some games that I do enjoy having it that way. It's just like some of the games that are certainly right now that are games that I could play on my console, like the Portals and stuff. I played through both Portals with a mouse and keyboard just fine. It's
I played with you.
Yeah, exactly, right? But I don't know. I just felt like I think I could get there to use a mouse and keyboard just fine. But it's like what you just said about the iOS controls. Is this? I just don't have time to. I want to be able to jump in and enjoy and not have to suffer that period of getting used to things and you know, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I wasn't making fun. I was definitely making fun of Pat with his mouse and keyboard thing. So Pat, and I know you're listening, you can bitch at me later in Facebook, but I wasn't making fun of you in any way, shape, or form. But I know
you weren't.
I think you're right. The learning curve, if you want to just jump in and play, then having to go through some kind of learning curve sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I totally understand that. I'll be interested to see how many games it can play. You know, how many games that you can comfortably fit into it, you know.
Yeah, and the one thing about the Microsoft controller, I did read a forum post somewhere about it, and they said that the 360 controller is kind of becoming the default gamepad type. Like the generic gamepads are becoming less and less popular, and a lot of games are now becoming ready made to play with those controllers.
Well, and I think too that at least this has been my observation in electronic stores and cruising Amazon. It seems like the 360 controller for the aftermarket ones are the 360 controller is modeled after more than the PS controller now. And I don't really understand why, because the 6-axis and the Rumble 2 or whatever the fuck they called that one, they rushed out the door when people got pissed, really isn't that different than a PS2 controller.
No, it's pretty well exactly the same.
But it's just my visual observation, cruising the internet, so on and so forth. It seems like they copied the 360 controller a lot more. And honestly, the 360 controller actually is more comfortable to me.
Yeah, me too.
I like the PS2 controller, but it's you know, the PS controllers, but this is what we've been playing, not controller talk. I think we've gone too far now. Glacinator, if you're still awake and still with us over there, what have you been playing this week? Hey, I'm saying that because I made myself a cup of coffee while John was doing what he's been playing, because I'm realizing my energy is dropping fast, and if I want to get the show edited and out the door tonight, I probably better start picking it back up.
All right, I'll try to be quick about it then.
Don't need to be quick about it.
I don't
really
have that much to say anyway, so it's all right. I don't really have that much to say anyway.
No, I wasn't telling you to be quick about it. I was just saying that I was telling you, are you still awake? Because I know you're tired, and I'm definitely tired.
It's fine. But this week, of course, I mean, you're going to be hearing me say this a lot. I've been playing more Halo 4. And really, this week, I got more into the Dominion online game type. And basically, Dominion is sort of a territories, sort of Battlefield-style capture point type of game. Usually, most of the maps have three different capture points, which are like base houses. And you can go inside, and you go inside, and there's like this little terminal that you can activate. And if you stay there for like a certain amount of seconds, then you capture the point. And what's cool is that, unlike Battlefield, where all you do is capture the point and then move on, is that once you capture these points, you can upgrade them. So the longer you have people in the bases, the more it's going to get upgraded. So you have an interesting sort of choice between whether, do I want to stay in this base and upgrade it and get like put turrets on it and have vehicles spawn inside, or do I want to move on to the next one and try to capture the enemy's capture points? So it allows for the game type itself to be a lot more fluid, and you have people moving to all these different base objectives. And so you'll have people employing different strategies, where I played one game where we all just, none of us went to the faraway bases. We all went to the close base, upgraded all the way. And at the same time, we all left that base and just like blitzkrieged our way through the rest of the map because we had gotten all the upgrades for the A base, which is like the mech, you know, and the turrets on the roof and warthogs and rocket launchers and all this stuff. And then another game I played, the game right after actually, instead of waiting for that base to upgrade, we just captured the first base, went to the second base, got the third base, and just went through it. And what's cool is that once you capture all three bases, the game doesn't end right away. You have to completely eliminate the enemy team before they can recapture a base. So after you get the third base on your map, it will highlight where all the enemy targets are. And so you can go around killing them, but they have overshields. So it's sort of like a last stand sort of thing. It sort of feels like zombies. Halo infection game type in a way, just in that these are overpowered and they're sort of flailing around because, you know, it's their last chance before they lose the game. So I've really come to like that specific game type, Dominion. It's been a lot of fun. I also tried out Regicide, which is sort of like Juggernaut, but not Juggernaut at all. It appears to be just normal Slayer, except the person who's in the lead with kills is called the King. And if you kill the King, then you get 10 more points than you would normally get if you kill the normal person. So you sometimes have people going to kill the King, or people just trying to play the game like normal Slayer and trying to level up from there. It's an interesting concept, but there's not enough going on for it to be totally exciting. And last week I was also complaining in Halo about how the weapons spawn on the maps. And while I still don't like it, it's sort of growing on me. I can see why they changed the idea. Because today I had some friends over in my room, and they all wanted to try online out. And so three of us were playing on the same screen, and both of them hadn't played Halo in a long time. So they wouldn't know where the weapons would spawn on the map if they did. I mean, but they knew how to play the basic game. So they were able to hop on, spawn a class, and just get right into it. And they didn't suck like you normally would suck if you start out on a Halo game not knowing where anything spawns. So I can see them changing the drops for that reason. I still don't necessarily like it, but it allows for your friends to hop on easily and easier for the game to be picked up by other people. Also this week, I went to GameStop and with a friend, and he went to pick up a game. But while we were leaving, they had the Wii U kiosk set up. And so the clerk was like, oh, you should go try it out. Like, we got Rayman set up. So we tried out the Rayman Legends game for the Wii U. And my friend played on the Wiimote while I played on the gamepad because I wanted to try out the gamepad. Initially, just to talk about the gamepad, it feels weird. I don't know if it's because my hands are small, but I had a weird time holding it. Like, my hands didn't fit properly into the grooves in the back because they were so small, and I had problems reaching the joysticks themselves because the surfaces aren't curved. They're pretty straight on the front. So that was an initial problem I had. Also, it's really weird when you have to use a stylus in Rayman, because what you're doing is you're basically guiding this character through with a stylus, is that you're holding it with one hand. And I assume if you're playing in a house, I guess you would have it on your lap. I mean, but this was in GameStop, so I couldn't put it on the ground or anything. I had to hold the Wii U pad in one hand and a stylus in the other. And so it was just felt really awkward. And I was having a hard time just moving it around just because I was trying to, I was doing this balancing act while I was playing the game. But that's just the physicality of the controller. The game itself, Rayman, which is also already on Xbox and everything, I mean, is already a great game. But what they did with the Wii U version is that you can have your friends play on the TV as the main characters, and then you can play as sort of this Firefly character on your game on the gamepad. And you move the stylus, move the character around, and you basically can like hit enemies out of the way for your friends. You can move platforms so your friends can jump and get to certain areas. You can make your friends jump higher if you touch them. Just simple stuff. It's sort of like in Mario Galaxy, you could have a second player and they could sort of shoot things. Except this is a lot more in depth. You're a lot more involved than just shooting stars at enemies. So I can see that the system has a lot of potential, but the controller itself really just turned me off from the whole thing. Maybe it's just because I have to have it in my lap to play. It was really off-putting to me, and that sort of disappointed me. Also, I didn't play this week, but I talked about it last. I said I was going to talk about it last week, but I guess it would be 2 weeks ago. I finally got around to getting back into the Walking Dead episodes by Telltale, and I had already played episode 1 and episode 2, and so this time I was playing through. I played through all of episode 3, and I got 90% of the way through episode 4. And I have to say that episode 3 is absolutely amazing. Episode 2 was lacking. The storyline itself wasn't really that intriguing. I mean, there were some interesting parts, but I really never really felt that freaked out or disturbed or anything. It was sort of ho-hum to me. But episode 3, I cried, I laughed, I raged. every emotion that could be felt was felt when I played through episode 3. Certain things happened to certain characters that made me very mad. And there was a point during the episode where I literally stopped the game and left my room just because I couldn't handle what was happening. Like I was visibly frustrated. My roommate asked if I was okay because I was so fuming mad at one of these characters in the game that I couldn't handle it anymore. And for a game to be able to make me that passionate about something, it really takes a lot. So I'm really surprised I'm able to connect with these characters so much. And Telltale did a really good job with trying to incorporate you in the story, because I really am feeling for the characters when things happen to them or don't happen to them. So I definitely give episode 3 10 stars out of 10 stars, 5 out of 5, whatever you want to call it. Episode 4, it hasn't been as good. It's starting to, you can feel that start starting to wind down to gear up for the main conclusion. That isn't to say it isn't good. It still is, but episode 3, man, was just ridiculous. So for those of you that do have Walking Dead, definitely play episode 3, because I was amazed by that, and it was a train ride. I did a pun there. If you've played, you get what I'm saying. But that's what I've been playing this week.
We'll get back to the Wii U stuff, because I kind of think you were already down on it, and I'm not sure a GameStop kiosk where the thing's glued to it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the fairest.
There was like a wire attached to it and everything. So yeah. I mean, it's in GameStop, so I'm being biased. But
we'll get back to that, because I do have a specific question, because as John brought up in our super secret underground tunnel show notes chat thing, Facebook, whatever. You know, we're going to talk about the Wii U here a little later, but I'm waiting for the last Walking Dead to come out. It's actually going to be one of my late winter purchases. We were just actually talking about this on Facebook too, that the I'm going to, you know, the Sega All-Stars Racing Reborn or whatever the hell it's called, it's coming out tomorrow, and it's like, I ain't got time for it. But I'm definitely going to pick it up later this winter. And if it's a half the fun that the first one was, it's a game that like the whole crew should pick up when it hits the, you know, I mean, I picked it up two or three months after it was out for like $25. In fact, I'm a little surprised it got a sequel. But I definitely want to, you are about the fifth person that said that about Telltale's Walking Dead game or series. So as soon as all the rest of them are out, I've already got one. I may just end up buying a package when I see it on sale and say, fuck it. And, you know, I've got one. I'll buy it twice. But it's definitely one I want to get back to.
So it really was amazing.
Well, and there's one more. I mean, you got one more left.
There's five, actually. So.
Hmm?
I still haven't finished four, so I still... Yeah, I guess you're right. I still have another one. But...
Oh, so you just finished three.
I finished three. I'm like 89% of the way through four.
Yeah, so you got one more. And then I think there's been talk of them doing another season or whatever, but... I at least want to get through the first five of them before the year's over or like first week of January. It's still on the radar because the first one was, I mean, the first one I played was awesome. So, as for me, we'll get to the main one that I pretty much drove myself through all week, including, like, I think I got two messages on Xbox Live and one from our very own Pat. That game must be really, really good. You're playing it all the time. we'll get to that one in a second. Minecraft pushed an update. It fixed some stuff. Game seems to be working a little better, but I really wish the fine high-flying office folks at Mojang would actually, like, do an update where they just... work on the structure, because I'm still convinced there's memory leaks in that game that are making it a pain in the ass. I've been playing mostly in creative mode, so I haven't noticed it as much, and it seems to be getting better, but played some Minecraft. Amazingly enough, get ready to fall over in shock, audience. I have not played Guild Wars, but like twice since last week's show. That's coming to a screeching halt tomorrow because there's a big event going on all weekend. And if ArenaNet keeps doing this with Guild Wars, I'm going to be hooked for quite a while because I've got one character that's at the level cap. I've got some other characters that I want to work on. But it's going to become one of those games where when there's an event or I've got a guild event or something, I'll pop in. And that's the thing. You can do that and not feel lost. It's the great thing about Guild Wars. And the only other MMO I see coming on the horizon that may push me away from Guild Wars is Elder Scrolls Online from Bethesda. And I'm not even sure when that's due to start poking its head out. I've seen some early videos, but nothing major. Finally, I have... played Assassin's Creed. I have beaten Assassin's Creed 3. It's really, really difficult to wrap Assassin's Creed 3 into a neat little summation. I think the first thing I should say is that if you've never played an Assassin's Creed game before, but liked the setting and the storyline potential as I did, you're probably in for a semi-bumpy ride, depending on your patience level. Because the mechanics and the controls are not super polished, as far as I'm concerned. Ubisoft has had five Assassin's Creed games to make free-running and climbing and sneaking feel natural at all times and feel... badass at all times, and they just fall flat on their face quite a bit of the time. I was telling these guys before the show, right toward the end of the game, there's a chase sequence that literally took me 16 attempts to pass. Now, I'll grant you, I'm not an uber super gamer. I have never fucking claimed to be. But I can tell you that I have just enough knowledge about a lot of aspects of gaming that Ubisoft did not really give the player much room for error in that sequence and in a lot of sequences in this game. And that it's a shame because the storyline and the narrative of this game is amazing. Now, I'm going to say what I've seen a lot of writers and a lot of reviews say. Not the Desmond stuff, for those of you that know Assassin's Creed. That was okay, and it might have been better if I'd played all the games, but overall, it was like, okay, yeah, cool, dude. the Revolutionary War stuff and everything that goes with it, the narrative from beginning to end, is awesome. In fact, that final or close to final chase sequence would have been easy to walk away from if it hadn't been for the story narrative. you know, there are times in this game, as far as I'm concerned, you deal with some enemies that are far too sensitive at alerting. They are far too overpowered. There's these flipped-up hat, Hessian, German, prick, pole, God knows what dudes that seem to be able to run at about 85 miles an hour. You literally cannot escape them unless you run your ass completely out of the city. There's no hiding in crowds. There's no diving in hay because they are right behind you all the time. And then you tie in the suspect controls that 1 minute has you running down in the center of an alley with a good 5 feet on the other side. The next minute you're running up a wall that's not climbable and you look like the coyote in the Looney Tunes cartoons. Meanwhile, the German army's beating the living crap out of you. It's moments like that make it really tough to swallow. But this is probably one of the few times, and I'm seriously can't recall any other, although I bet there has been, that a story, a super strong story, has made controls and game mechanics that brutally piss me off totally worth it. I would say that I didn't get a full $60 value out of my single player experience. Not that we ever do. But I do not regret purchasing the game, partly because the story is so strong, but also because when Glacinator and I have time, we can play co-op. There is a shit ton for me to do after the story. There are little side missions. There are collectibles. I mean, all this, the RPG-ish type stuff that my OCD loves. I think what makes me so frustrated about it is it was so close. You know, it was so close to being perfect and to being awesome. And I think as time goes on and I play more and more games to bring here to the show to discuss, and I run across more and more of these games that are just broken just enough in key areas to frustrate the shit out of you, yet so right and so awesome in others that it just gets really old. And in some cases, like Assassin's Creed 3, it's not maybe the game's fault entirely. It's just the buildup of this is like the fifth or sixth game in the last 2 years I've played that's been so close and yet so far away from being, you know, a BioShock 1 or an enslaved experience. The happy marriage of controls and story, so on and so forth. I mean, once you get some things figured out, it's the controls become more intuitive. The one other thing I need to talk about is a lot of times they don't explain shit very well. And I don't need my hand derp-a-derp-bump stupid held constantly. But there's some shit they just literally leave you in the dark. Like when some enemies alert, you don't really understand why. You know, they don't tell you that that's an off-limits area, but it is an off-limits area. Trust me, you'll find out, because you'll have like 20 guys chasing you. I mean, you can fight it out, but at times the whole fight it out thing when you screw up gets a little ridiculous because you're an assassin. It's like, if I wanted to be a brawler, I'd go play, you know, I'd go play Guild Wars or Two Worlds 2 or some other kind of brawling RPG. And I admit, as a final note, some of this is my lack of patience for certain things. There are certain things that if they're not built right and if they don't work right, I tend to get frustrated with them faster because I think we're in a day and age where some hit structures, some control points, you know, some climbing surfaces should be fairly intuitive and fluid. You know, I mean, if you count Assassin's Creed, you also have Tomb Raider, you also have Metal Gear Solid. You have a lot of games where climbing and free climbing, Mirror's Edge, have been used. And you'd think we'd be able to come up with a mechanic that's fairly fluid and fairly intuitive, and we just haven't. Overall, like I said, the game in mechanical form is semi-broken, but the storyline is totally worth going through. If you like history, if you like the Revolutionary War period, this game is totally for you. It's worth the frustrations. I like the things that they had to say about certain historical figures, because believe it or not, a lot of what they said or how they portrayed certain historical figures in this game is actually pretty accurate. It's not the high school history book version of some characters and some historical figures, but when you start to dig into history a little more, Ubisoft got it pretty damn right. Some things have been changed, obviously. It's a damn video game. But overall, I was pretty impressed. If you take out, it's a 2 out of 10 for mechanics, and it's a 12 out of 10 for fucking gameplay or story. Let's put it that way. And then you at home can just average it out for yourself. Oh, also, note to self, Ubisoft, muskets are not heat seeking and laser guided at 500 or 600 yards and should not be able to shoot a horse out from under me at that distance. I know this because I've actually shot a replica 1700 Sierra musket before. They ain't that fucking accurate. And actually, guys, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, Johanna Glaze, that's the other problem. I really got to lay off because, like, the flintlock, both long gun and pistol, I've actually shot replicas of. So it's like, I really got to kind of shut the reality part of my brain off sometimes because, and just go, it's a fucking video game, you idiot. There is a portion of this that is me. Because there's some things you do with a flintlock pistol that I just know ain't physically possible. Let me tell you what, it's quite an experience shooting either one of those in real life. Them bastards were tough. That's all I know. So... So to you Assassin's Creed fans, including my two co-hosts sitting here, hopefully I did a fairly good job. I feel actually like I pretty much portrayed or pretty much got out how I felt about the game. That was pretty accurate, like 12 out of 10 for story and about 2 or 3 out of 10 for mechanics. So I wasn't super harsh. I wasn't as harsh as I probably could have been, and I wasn't quite as easy as I thought I'd be.
So what does that average out to then?
A 12 out of 10 and a 2 out of 10? I don't fucking know. I'm barely awake at this point. Do we have any math, man? You're the chemistry dude. John, what's that average out to? You know math, right?
Kinda. It is Thursday.
And that is true. Let's just say if I had a flintlock musket to my head, which at that range would do some damage, 6.5 or 7 is probably what I'd give it.
Yeah, that's a 7. Averages out too.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a 6. I'd be feeling a little bad if I gave it like a 6.5, but I'd feel pretty comfortable if I gave it a 7. Much higher than a 7. Yeah, I'd be hard pressed. Let's put it that way. But then again, to rational people like us, 7 out of 10 is not a bad score. You know, it's only idiots that use Metacritic to figure out who gets hired and who gets fired and who gets bonuses that. 7 out of 10 is bad, or if you're Cliffy.
That's right.
So that's all we've been playing this week. You probably, unless Glacinator and I get into co-op, that's probably the last you'll hear from Assassin's Creed. My game for next week that I'm going to try and run through is Torchlight 2, but I doubt I'll finish it before next week's show. Let's move on. If in case you've hit yourself in the head with a rock, guys, or been living under one, another COD game came out this week. It's Black Ops 2. Now, interestingly, everybody's loving the single-player storyline. I did find that fascinating in the few reviews I skimmed through. I was expecting Treyarch to fall flat on their face because they took a character and moved him, like, I don't know, 40 years into the future, blah, blah, blah. And I already played Ghost Recon Future Soldier this year, so I don't care about that. But here's my thing. I have seen references or marketing tie-ins on ESPN, two ESPN shows, The Late Night with Craig Ferguson, I think Leno, but I didn't see that one firsthand. Couple three TV ads and one radio ad, believe it or not. But that was kind of a GameStop, some other kind of Burger King, I don't know, tie-in that I was not really paying all that much attention to. Which tells me that COD has become a cultural phenomenon that is probably now bigger than the cultural phenomenon of Halo. Yet, I looked on my friends list. I had one friend playing it. Pat couldn't find anybody on his friends list. I think John said two. I didn't ask Glacinator. That's a long intro to the question, but I felt it was necessary. My question is, and we've asked this on the show before, maybe with this particular cast, maybe not. How many more do they got? How much longer can this train go? Because it's starting to even surprise me that they keep chugging at this pace. Glacinator, let's start with you. What are your thoughts? How much longer can they ride this cash cow?
I have no idea. I thought it would be almost dead by now, and it's not. I don't know why people keep buying it. I really have no idea why. I wish I could give you a reason.
Is it as surprising to you that it has not started to slide down?
I'm really surprised.
Well, I've got a theory here in a minute, but I just want to get you guys' initial thoughts. John, how much longer do you think the cash cash bleeding cow that is COD can keep going?
I mean, as long as they're putting out a quality game, I guess there'll be an audience. It's just, when does Treyarch burn out is more the bigger question, I guess. When you start seeing the lower quality, that's when it might happen, I guess.
Well, you got to remember too, you got Twin Gun Studios, and I don't mean that as in that's a studio, although that would be a cool name for one. You got twin studio guns going at this franchise anymore, or always has been. You've got a weakened, let's just say weakened to be nice, Infinity Ward, and you've got Treyarch. So, you got that kind of combo. I thought Treyarch, with the first Black Ops, which was the last COD game I played, did a better job than Infinity Ward did with Modern Warfare 2, which, considering some of the stuff Treyarch put out before, like World at War, was pretty impressive. But I think you're right. I think they're going to have to stub their toe. Or maybe this is what we are seeing. And it even transcends, like I said, Halo, because Halo has now moved on to different creators, essentially. I mean, it seems 343 has done an amazing job with it. I have not played it myself, but that's why I say it seems. Unless I play it, I'm not going to fully endorse that. Although I do know how the story works out, thanks to our very own Big Papa Batman. But I'm not giving him shit. I didn't care about spoilers. What Glacinator said and is what he's been playing about the capture the flag thing damn near makes me tempted to buy it, but still not that tempted. Are we looking at a Madden situation? That is my theory. Are we looking at a Madden situation? Because I know of two guys who own either a 360 or a PS3 respectively, and the only thing they play are Madden. Whichever NBA game is comes out for each of those respective systems, and occasionally NHL. That's all they play it for. And it's mostly Madden. Madden is the one game a year they play. They will play it for until the next one comes out, and they are completely happy and completely fine with that. And so I am fine with it too. If that's what floats your boat, then fine. Is this what COD has become? That's my premise. Is COD has gotten to such a point, it's become Madden. You're never really going to see it go away. It's just got this group or following that is dropping, but that's the game they play every damn year. Maybe because it's a little different than Madden, they play others, but this is the one they play every year, no matter what, end of story. John, let's start with you. What do you think of that? Is there any truth to my crazy theory, or what do you think? Because Madden is really kind of that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, There's definitely some validity to that. You know, I mean, with football, I mean, you're buying a Madden game, you're buying a football game. You know the rules, you know the plays. You know, there's some extra features here and there, and some tweaks and make things a little bit better, and you know, some things to try. And I certainly, like, following that model, I mean, Call of Duty, you know, people are very familiar with that. It's, you know, you're slipping back into, you know, familiar territory. Like my coworker Brett, he just got it last night, and he said he turned it on, jumped in, and he immediately got a multiplayer, like a 15 kill streak or something like that. I don't know. I want to say 15. It might have been a different number, but he said he just, you know, jumped in and wrecked it. And I, you know, my mind said, you know, I guess that means that playing one from one to the other is not that different. But he was totally satisfied with that. So, you know, I guess maybe it's a lot like playing a sports game where you know what to expect, but you just got new maps, new things to try, new weapons, you know, a couple, the core rules are the same, but there's some extra tweaks and twists.
That's actually also a major reason why EA doesn't get it and is going to continue to flounder and fail and ruin the Battlefield franchise. I mean, they've toasted the MOH franchise. I've now read enough about it to tell you I won't pick it up and play the single player, which pisses me off because the Danger Close did an excellent job telling a human story with the first one. And they fucked it with the second one, trying to make it like COD. Glacier, what do you think of the whole Madden once-a-year event kind of plateau that maybe COD's gotten to that other shooters can't and probably won't?
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something with the one game per year release. I mean, because I'm not sure how many years ago was it that Halo 2 was really big online. What year was that? 2003? Maybe.
I think it was 3 because it was there. I just saw the timeline for Xbox Live because they're having their 10-year anniversary thing, and I got an email. Actually, hang on. If you give me a quick sec, I can pull up that email because I had the timeline thing. Let me see here. Yep, there it is. When you first joined Xbox Live. What? Oh, come on, computer. Why are you? There we go. Halo 2. Yeah, actually, that was 2004-ish, according to this timeline.
Because I know the running joke back then would be to make fun of these type of people that aren't necessarily gamers but play, you know, Madden, and it would be Halo back then. The joke was they would only play Madden and Halo. And now it's sort of evolved into they only play Madden and Call of Duty. And I think the reason why that is specifically for the it comes out once a year. You know, the type of people that only play these games, they really only feel like putting down cash for something once a year. And like John said, they know what they're going to get. They know the rules. It's pretty much the same thing, you know, but with maybe some new maps or some new characters, a little bit of a different spin. But the fact that it comes out once a year and they know it comes out, you know, around November, you know, it's just it's like a seasonal thing that they do and it makes sense. I mean, I always assumed back when in Halo 2 days, you know, Halo was a big, you know, bro game, you know, but it's not anymore. And it's specifically for the year thing. That makes complete sense to me.
Well, and I think, you know, the trouble you get into when you try and criticize COD in any way, shape, or form, and I'm seeing this all over Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and any social media you can fucking think of, is if you try and criticize it in any form, you're a hater and you're being a dick because so many people do enjoy it. And I remember that during Halo 3. I was not around consoles for Halo 2. But I remember that also being a thing during Halo 3. And here's the thing. You can criticize a game without hating it. But at the same time, too, the Uber defenders and the Uber haters just need to shut the hell up. I mean, if it's not for you, it's not for you. And that's the thing. I think the wall I've run into this year with FPS in general is I don't want the same thing over and over again. You know, Halo 4, it was really close, but I wanted Assassin's Creed and Torchlight and hopefully Dishonored before we go off the air for the year. Dishonored might be pushing it, what I've heard about. I don't know if I want two frustrating stealth experiences back to back. I might be clinically insane when it's over. So I'm completely comfortable with walking away and seeing what happens next year. And I think what changed with Halo, and maybe you can speak to this, Glaze, Reach was such a different experience from what Pat at least kind of made me think. It seemed like from what I could get from Pat, or at least the feeling I got from him, is Reach was such a different experience compared to Halo 1, 2, and 3 that it kind of capped the Halo brodom experience. And maybe because COD was on such a meteoric rise at the same time, you know, that Halo 4 now is seen as for maybe all, or it's changed enough. Is there any truth to that too? Is that maybe what's also helping COD, as Halo's kind of seen as changed these days?
I don't think so. I mean, because for Halo hasn't really changed that much. I mean, you had the story departure, I guess you could say it was a decent change. I mean, but you still have these, you know, these people in suits blowing things up. You go from point A to point B, you got warthogs, you got, you know, the super cool guns, and it's pretty much the same thing. I didn't see it as that much of a big change, personally.
But yeah, again, go ahead.
I still can't put a reason on why COD is doing so well comparatively.
Well, and that's the key issue here. How do you compute the cultural? You guys see what I'm saying? I mean, how many people are playing this just solely because all their buddies are playing it? Never touched a single player. It's the same thing I look at as EA deserves a certain level of hate. But a lot of the hate that they're getting is just cultural noise, because it's so in and so easy to hate them. And I think that's where I fall apart with this whole COD thing, because how do you compute cultural? How do you compute people who just play one game a year? I mean, I still consider them gamers. Fuck it. That's fine by me, you know, but there's a cultural phenomenon here that you just can't, you know, fit into the model and make sense of, I think. And we've talked about the cultural, and it's become something of a fascination of mine since way back in episode 35 when Jim and I said that essentially that the cultural phenomenon of Halo went over both our heads. Actually, that may be something COD wants to do. Do kind of a Reach. Maybe draw back in some people, because Halo Reach, it's made me enough that maybe if Halo 5 or the next Halo is going on in a different time in a different place, where I'm feeling more into just playing a standard run of the mill shooter, I'd be into it because I like Reach enough. So there you go. If you've got an idea of why COD is doing great or is still chugging along 7 or 8 games in, we'll give you some ways you can contact us after the show, and an unacceptable answer is because it's awesome, dude. Let's move on, because I think this show is going to be an epic. Survivornaut G and the crew, there's so many of them. I'm not going to list names. You know the players. They're here, they're there, they're everywhere. They're antis, they're positives, they're neutrals. Who the hell knows? But I know they got a question for us. Take it away, Survivornaut G in the zoo.
What's up, WonderPod crew? Chris Lloyd signing in.
Oh, man, I feel groggy. Whatever was in those darts sure packs a punch. Feels like I've been out for a week. You know what was weird? One of those guards looked like your brother.
Yeah, I was actually thinking the same thing as I was waiting for you to wake back up. I guess if you have a doppelganger running around, maybe that was his. Bloody crazy. That's totally not Andrew. Couldn't be.
Do you think they bought us as monkeys?
No, they think we are apes. That anti-Pat man was in here this morning, mumbling something about forcing us to play E.T. for the Atari later. And something about the boss coming.
Bruce Springsteen is coming? Sweet. I'm going down, 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 down.
We need to play up this disguise as long as we can if we're going to get Diddy out of here.
Oh yeah, right. The monkey. I totally forgot about
it. Are you for real? Why do you think we're in this predicament? Fun?
Hey, hey, your camera just flashed red a second ago. Does that mean the video was working again?
No. Wait a second. Let me rewind a few seconds.
Video was working again?
No. Wait a second. Let me rewind a few seconds.
Video was working again?
No. Wait a second. Let me rewind a few seconds.
Wait! You just did that.
Right. Yeah, there was a flicker of you on screen for a moment. Then it just cut out.
I know why your camera doesn't work. In fact, I am responsible. Go listen back to episodes 74 through 76. Remember all the anus talk?
So what? So you like to sodomize monkeys? I already knew you were a freak.
Oh, you'll see. You better ask your pathetic little question to your silly little gamer meatbag friends before the anti-Patman comes in here and shows you what prisoners get to do here. Especially apes. Oh, you'll see.
Where'd he go?
I hate when he does that. He's still around. He just likes to hide and reveal himself when he feels like it. You got that question?
That's awkward and disturbing. Yep. Here goes. Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil, and many more games have all had a makeover. Not just upscaled, but totally redone for today's standards. Are there any games that you'd like to see remastered? Or are there any films or TV series that have not already had a gaming makeover that you would like to see? Personally, I think a Goonies game made today has the potential to be amazing. Answers on a postcard, chaps.
So, you apes like to ask questions about video games, do you? I've got a little surprise for you later. But first, who are you really? How did you get in here? And get here so far? This is a monkey sanctuary, not an ape sanctuary. We don't like your kind around here.
So you're like a racist within the primate world?
Bigot!
Enough of this monkey business.
Oh, dude, that was awesomely appropriate considering.
You'd think we'd set up this whole installment around that one line.
There's nothing funny about monkey business. Just you wait until the boss gets here. Until then, though, we're going to play a little game I like to call Mouse Out of the House.
Is that kind of like that old board game Mousetrap? I loved that game.
I don't think that's like that at all. We probably should end this transmission before we traumatize the listening audience at home.
But what about what my alternative reality self was talking about with Diddy?
Enough. It's time to play the game. Are you ready? Enough. It's time to play the game. Are you ready? Enough. It's time to play the game.
I think your camera is set on a loop again, Chris.
One second.
Enough. It's time to play
the game. There we go. Continue.
Yeah, Audio Master G will fix this in post. Focus. Character. This is some serious shit. And scene. Uh-oh. I'm not down with that.
You don't, you think?
We've got two words for ya.
Digger!
Say love, come quick.
Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it. All about control, and if you can take it. All about your stand.
Makeovers, makeovers, makeovers. What would I like to see? What would I like to see on a current system? Well, if I can go back to some of my Nintendo roots, Chris, I would like to see Zelda Link to the Past in a top, you know, keep that top down look that it has, but I'd like to see it use some fun 3D on the 3DS. I'd like to see, and which I imagine would look really nice on an XL, 3DS XL. That's probably the biggest one. And then there's some other games. Battletoads and Star Tropics are two other NES games that I really enjoy when I was a kid. And I think that I think some sort of an HD redo or redux of those, you know, it's long overdue, to be honest. Now, movies and TV. I listened to your question, and I'm hoping that I'm going to answer this correctly, but So I'm going to tell you some movies or that I think need some video game treatments of the modern type. You said The Goonies would be a good one. There's a movie that I liked when I was a kid called The Monster Squad. And The Monster Squad were sort of a play on The Goonies, where there was a group of kids who were facing off against, in that movie, the classic universal monsters. So your Dracula, Wolfman, Frankenstein, that kind of stuff. I think there's a game in there somewhere where you take, you know, kind of, you know, I don't want to shout out the Colossus style, but like you take on these classic monsters one by one in their own set levels, and they're a boss at the end of each one. I think there's definitely some potential there. I made a little Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference earlier in the show. I hope someone caught it. But a Hitchhiker's Guide adventure game for a modern console would be pretty fun. Walking Dead is proof to me that the adventure games can be really, really good. And I'd like to see something really funny come out of a Hitchhiker's Guide themed one. And finally, The Last Starfighter. I talked about that movie one time before. Yeah, just the idea of... I'm not even sure if I want the whole movie turned into a game, but I'd like to see an HD modern take on the game that the kid plays in that game, which gets him to be the starfighter and taken off into space to save the galactic and save the galaxy. And because, you know, it seemed like a pretty cool premise, you know, like this in a first person flying, you know, space shooter kind of thing. It could be pretty cool. Yeah, good question. What do you think, Glaze? You got any picks?
Yeah, I mean, this one has been mentioned before and it's clearly overdone, but I really think that Pokemon should be definitely have some sort of revamp sometime soon. And what I mean by that is to get off of the 2D model that they keep using. I mean, the sprites are cute, you know, it works, it's fun and all, but I really think that you could have an interesting departure from the usual. I think it'd be really interesting if they incorporate a 3D world as opposed to the normal 2D worlds in Pokemon. And what I mean by that is more of a sort of Fallout style, you know, walk around and you just sort of randomly encounter these Pokemon, not necessarily like by going into grass like you do in the games, but they just sort of walk around, sort of like the super mutants do in Fallout 3, and you can either fight them or catch them by actually physically throwing the ball at them rather than just, you know, pressing a button and having a chance to catch the ball. I mean, there's a lot of physicality to the games that aren't really shown because it's 2D and so limited in the sprites. So I think that'd be really interesting. I mean, Nintendo would never do it. That's such a ballsy move. I don't see them ever doing it, but that'd be really awesome. And John took my idea since we were talking about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy before the show. I thought that'd be a really cool sort of adventure style game. Maybe a point and click game. It might work. It had to be pretty heavily dialogue based for the humor to be there. So I don't know if you could have like a shooter or a RTS or anything. It really wouldn't make much sense. But instead of using that idea, I was thinking, I know there's already a game for this coming out, but it's not necessarily the game that I wanted. And that is a game for a show on Cartoon Network called Adventure Time. And Adventure Time is a cartoon show where there is a boy and he has a magical stretchy dog. And they go on all kind of these crazy adventures. Like the show is very odd. You can tell that it's really more geared towards adults watching it than kids, because it's some pretty dark humor in there sometimes. But I think it'd be pretty cool if Adventure Time had sort of a a 3D platformer game, sort of like Banjo-Kazooie, rather than the point-and-click game that they're coming out with, I think, this month. The art style of the show is so amusing, and the character design is so weird that it would fit perfectly in sort of a Mario 64 Banjo-Kazooie-style game, where you just sort of hop around in these crazy environments. So I think that would be pretty cool. Those are my choices.
Oh, makeovers. I mean, it's such a wide-ranging question, because, like, you know, some games, they just upgrade them for each generation, and some games, they completely retool, you know, which is getting harder and harder if you've seen the outrage over the Devil May Cry upgrades by Team Ninja. Not Team Ninja, Ninja Theory. My bad. I guess the first one that I'd like to see, because it was just such an utter and complete piece of garbage, I'd love to see somebody take the Atari game E.T. Extraterrestrial, whatever the hell it was called, the one that like literally got dumped in a landfill, and try to make something out of that. Just take the basics of the game and make something modern out of that. That's more my joke suggestion, although if somebody did it, it would be awesome. John and Glacinator's idea of a point-and-click adventure for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is actually a pretty good idea, because if you stop and think about it, Telltale's The Walking Dead is essentially an old point-and-click or old-school point-and-click adventure, and it's done really well because the key to point-and-click adventures is damn good writing. And everything I've heard, although I haven't played through them, all of them yet, The Walking Dead has that. And so the kind of point and click, move around a little bit, yes, it's more 3D than a true point and click, but still, it's kind of a mix, would be awesome with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But I'll give you another one that might be kind of comical, mixing the book and video game world, is Choose Your Own Adventure. The Choose Your Own Adventure line of books getting a video game of some type. I mean, you could probably almost do that one 3D, but point and click would be even better. So that's kind of tying the whole bulk of your question together. I think a choose your own adventure style, or just copying some of the books. The books were not stellar, but they entertained the shit out of me as a kid. I also kind of like Glacinator's 3D Pokemon. I think a full 3D rendered open world Pokemon game would be awesome. Except Glacinator's right. Nintendo doesn't have the balls to do anything like that with their franchise. Hell, an open world Mario, open world 3D Mario game would be badass too. I mean, there's so many that if you just got the courage and the willingness to take an old franchise, and modernize it or move it into a new realm, you know, there's so many possibilities. But the problem is fan backlash, publishers not wanting to do it, making it work, so on and so forth. It can be a daunting task. One final thought. I've said this, I think, on previous shows, and unfortunately, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen whether I want it to or not. The one game I would never, ever want to see remade is Planescape Torment. I've talked about 100 times how, to me, that's one of the best story narratives, if not the best story narrative in any video game I've ever played. Yes, that's right, even above Enslaved. Everything about that, from the AD&D rules to the story to the graphics to the characters to it controlling like an old school, you know, Black Isle, BioWare RPG, it's just perfect. I just cannot see that being ever redone in any way, shape, or form that would be awesome to me. But, you know, outside of that, I'd be open for almost anything. And I may change my mind on Planescape Torment, because I do believe there's a Baldur's Gate enhanced edition that is either out or soon to be out. And, you know, if they did good enough with Baldur's Gate, maybe I'd be more comfortable with Planescape Torment being done. So, there you go, guys. Chris, appreciate the question. Hope to hear from you Survivor Not G and the rest of the clan next week. We've almost run out of show with the three topics we've done. Do we want to quickly attempt to talk about the Wii U since it is... I don't even know when its launch date is.
It's Sunday. This Sunday.
Oh, very cool.
Yep.
Good to know. Do you guys want to just cover that really quick, or do we want to shove it to next week since the news will probably be... Ah, fuck it. Let's just cover it real quick. If it's a longer show this week, hell with it. The Wii U is coming out Sunday. See, I'm prepared. I know these things, especially if I cut out John telling me when it was coming out, which we know I will not do. Here's the thing for me. I just kind of want to discuss it in general. We heard in what we've been playing, Glacinator's less than stellar experience with the controller. You could almost tie that back into John and I talking about repetition, so on and so forth. That aside, the critics or the gaming press, what bit I've observed, and of course I linked you guys to an article by Ben Kachura of the Penny Arcade Report. He's a writer I don't always agree with, especially about non-gaming topics, but he's one I respect. Seems to be pretty pleased with it. The new Super Mario Bros. U is getting pretty good scores across Metacritic, including from Jim Sterling, who has long been known as somebody who isn't particularly fond of touch and motion controls if they're not implemented correctly. Bottom line here is the critics seem to be taking to the Wii U much more than they did the Wii. What are your thoughts on that? I guess first off, and John, we'll go with you since Glacinator touched on his on the Wii U earlier.
Yeah, I think to me that's good news that the Wii U is getting some positive buzz. There's definitely been, and as Ben writes in an article, there's definitely been some confusion about what exactly the Wii U is and is it worth the upgrade. And not that I don't, you know, Joe Blow six pack and soccer moms are not going to be, you know, checking out joystick and stuff perhaps so much to find out info. To me, you know, quote unquote hardcore gamer who's a Nintendo geek at heart, it's definitely some good news to hear.
Does that make you think you'll buy one sooner, or are you still sticking with your? I mean, you've already said you're not going to buy it day one, and I think Chris Lloyd is the only one in our extended group that's got it pre-ordered. I would suspect before Christmas is over, Pat will probably have one. But that's a guess on my part. Does this make you more likely to purchase it sooner? Or are you kind of standing pat until you see something you absolutely want for it?
I say that.
Give me a rough guess. I'm well aware of how things work. Yeah. It happens to me too.
I will say, hearing that, like what you just mentioned, that Super Mario Bros. U and even Nintendo Land has been getting some pretty good reviews as well. That those games are decent and not just like the whole thing about the new Super Mario Bros. And how close it is to the Mario Bros. 2 release on 3DS and how lackluster the Wii version. I mean, it was a huge seller, but it felt like more of the same. Plus the multiplayer stuff, like the fact that it's actually getting good reviews is a good step. So I would think, yeah, maybe sooner than I thought, but I'm still going to wait for that real killer app, I think, before I jump in.
Well, here's the thing, and that's I can't quote it word for word, but Jim Sterling in his review of Super Mario Bros. U brought up the fact that the 3DS and the last Wii Super Mario Bros. Felt like way more of the same, was not fun, this, that, and the other thing. And I think essentially what he said was he sees why now, because they were saving it all for this Super Mario Bros. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of in a way makes sense. The other thing is, while we still don't know entirely what the online is going to be, there are no more friend codes, so that means they're doing something different. Obviously it's in HD and I am really kind of happy to see Nintendo Land getting at least some love. You know, mini games can be complete and utter crap, but we got to kind of look at them differently in my mind, because a lot of the 99 cent games we buy on our mobile devices are much more than mini games at times, you know, and they seem to entertain us pretty fully. If I was to name a company that would take full advantage of that and put it on a console experience, I would say it would be Nintendo. Now we come to the more cynical of the three of us when it comes to the Wii U, and his earlier statements probably didn't help matters much. Glacinator, the positive, well, no, let me back up. I'm not even going to ask you the question I asked John. Less than stellar experience at GameStop aside, are you still enough of a Nintendo fan that you want to give it another shot in a better environment, or are you just completely souring on this deal, media or not?
I'm not souring on it because of the controller experience. I was already soured on it. And like John said, I'm not even planning on getting it until there's going to be that game that I just have to get. And I know that's going to happen eventually, but I don't see that happening until much later on in its console cycle as of now.
So you're still... Let me ask you this, because I haven't gotten this vibe from John, although John can chime in afterwards and tell me I'm wrong. Do you think that you're still feeling burnt to a certain extent by the Wii, so you're less giving to the Wii U?
I'm less willing to jump on the bandwagon, because I know that I can be let down, and I know what I want and what I don't want. And so, as of now, I still don't see anything that necessarily gets me interested, so I'm still very cautious about this whole thing.
Okay, so your personal feelings aside, and everything you just said is completely understandable. That's why I brought up the fact that as a Nintendo fan, you felt a little burnt about the Wii U or the Wii. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's when you go overboard and act like an ass with it, which I'm not saying you do, then it becomes a problem. Feeling let down by Nintendo by the Wii is because of the Wii is nothing wrong with that. Putting all that aside for a second, as a podcast talking head, are you happy to see the critics being positive about the thing and seeing that it probably does have potential on down the road?
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I don't have like a vendetta.
No, I didn't think that either.
I mean, I want Nintendo to do well. I want them to continue producing games that I like, but going off of the information I have right now and what I've played with, I just don't see myself buying it.
Was I correct in that, John, in that you didn't feel as let down or burnt by the Wii as some people did? And I'm not saying Glacinator did a lot. I'm just saying I've always gotten that vibe from him. It seems like at times Pat, same thing. I mean, it's only the really hardcore Nintendo heads, like a certain Shower Legend that seem to be goose-stepping to whatever Nintendo does. Were you really let down by the Wii? Are you more forgiving when it comes to praising the Wii U, or what is your feelings on that?
I wouldn't say let down by the Wii U. I mean, when it came out, there was a lot of promise with the Wii, I will say that, in terms of what motion control was going to bring. And I don't know if it ever, even with Motion Plus, did it really get there. But you know, there are some quality titles on the Wii that are worth playing, and you know, for the hardcore and the casual alike. But my problem with what happened with the Wii and was the huge gaps in games that I wanted to buy, and because it was a couple of years there that there was nothing, and that's what kind of made me more, you know, it's what drove me to buy a 360. Is because it was nothing to play at that time. Like the year the Animal Crossing Wii came out, like, what the hell? It was nothing.
Let me ask you this, and it'll be the final thing, and then I've got a quick thing to say about it, and we'll be done. Glacinator, you first. There's no way the Wii U can win, is there? Because it's going to be unfairly compared to the massive sales numbers that the Wii did.
Yeah, they're going to be shooting themselves in the foot no matter what. Compare it to anything. Compare it to Wii, compare it to the console cycle right now, future console cycle. It's just it's at such a weird time that you're not going to really be able to actively think about in relation to everything else.
So are we going to have to look at this? I mean, rightly or wrongly, shouldn't we look at this console a little different? Maybe not compare it to other things?
I mean, we probably should, but I mean, we're going to. I mean, everything we talk about in here is in relation to everything else. So I don't know if there's a way that we can go about doing it that makes sense.
Yeah, I wasn't saying we as a podcast or we as a whole as gamers weren't going to compare it. I mean, that's our favorite thing, is to drag one thing down by comparing it to another. That's just what we do. But I'm ultimately not certain that's fair, because it's again, it's like the Wii. It's different again, and so there's really nothing fair in my mind to compare it to. Are you think the same thing, John? Do you think this thing is kind of, to a certain extent, just doomed because it's not going to match the Wii sales numbers, and it's kind of doing its own thing again?
Yeah. It's a difficult task. I mean, the Wii was such a runaway phenomenon. Like, I don't think there's anything that's going to be able to compare it to the Wii, you know, Nintendo or not. That article that Ben wrote, it talked about how, you know, it's going to be a hard sell, even though there's definitely a lot of potential there. And I have to agree. I'm not sure if the Wii U will be the worldwide phenomenon that the Wii was. But then again, when the Wii came out, I didn't think that would be the big phenomenon it was either.
Well, I tell you what, unless the numbers are rock bottom or stratosphere, my full intention for 2013 with us here on WonderPod is to not discuss the damn thing until about 8 months out. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And that's going back to what you're talking about, Glacinator. I want to try, at least on our tiny little corner of the internet, to inject some fairness into it. Because we don't know what this thing is going to do just yet. It's obvious that Microsoft and Sony will stick pretty closer, or much closer, to their last set. But if you stop and think about it, while the Wii U maintains a lot of the characteristics of the Wii, it is again done something different with that gamepad. And the fact that you can play it on the TV, not play it on the TV, use the damn gamepad as a universal remote, it'll groom the cat, wash your clothes, you know, I mean, it's again, Nintendo has done something completely different again. So my goal, unless it's just absolutely positively something we got to talk about, and the good news is I'm the jerk in charge deciding what's, you know, absolutely positively stuff we got to talk about. And I want it to have some time out in the open marketplace before I start making my final say one way or another. I think that's only fair and only right. And I'll tell you, the critics don't really matter to me in a lot of ways, but the fact that they're enjoying it tells me that that there is potential to reach the same audience as the Wii reached. It's all going to come down to how Nintendo markets it.
If I may throw in one quick little nugget, a little story.
Sure.
My mom came by today for a visit, and as we were sat down just, you know, having a chit chat, she asked me about the Wii U and what did I think of it, and which amazed me that my 60 plus year old mother knew what the hell it was, because I barely know what it is, and that she knew about the whole switching the screens from the TV to the controller. And that was a cool thing, and I was actually surprised that she got it, you know.
Well, and there again, that's I think that just reaffirms my stance for WonderPod in 2013 and the end of 2012. Even though we've only got realistically four shows after it comes out, anything in the first 4 weeks, I'm probably just going to not even pay any attention to. What kind of penetration does it get? You know, your mom's heard of it. I know a couple older folks that own Wiis that have heard of it. Haven't specifically asked me about it, but I've heard them talking a little bit about it, you know, or wondering what it is. What, you know, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I personally, for myself, would rather see Nintendo come out with stuff that kind of goes, hey, we skipped you last generation. We're not going to skip you this generation to people like you and Glacinator. But at the same time, too, maintaining what they got to maintain. You know, I don't want them kissing the people, the hardcore's ass. I'm just saying if they give you guys little more bits and pieces that make you happy, make you want to buy it, that would make me, you know, a lot happier. We'll just have to see. I know for a fact it's not something I'm going to even contemplate getting until next year. But that's more to do with the fact that I also have a PC full of Steam games. It doesn't have anything to do. That gamepad's got me interested. I have to admit. It's. I think that Legoland game comes out, I may be hosed. I may be off to my fine local retailer and buy it. Oh, I think we've talked enough, gentlemen. Let's get out of here. I'm changing the end of the show. Pat did it so much better, so much more car salesman, so much more natural than I ever could. And I have to admit, even if it isn't, I feel like it's so redundant and ridiculous. Here's how this is going to work from now on. There are multiple ways and multiple things you need to know. One, this show's on iTunes. Grab it there. Two, we have a Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. If you become friends with that Facebook, you will find out everything you need to know about this show, the places it's located, and you'll also find posts from our website, which is wonderpodonline.com, where when this show gets posted, we have posts from John, we have posts from Glace, we have posts from Gunsage, we have posts from Pat, we have posts from G, we have posts from all kinds of people. In conjunction with that website, we have YouTube channels. I just put up the second part of the LFT Minecraft Zombie Night, loosely titled, or in parentheses, Zombies weren't the only thing being assholes on the server that night. Glacinator has a YouTube channel that when he's not drowning in art history homework, he does some playthrough videos. Pat has a YouTube channel. He hasn't done any Halo videos yet, but I'm sure there will be some before the Halo 4 madness is over. And if none of that works for you, and you'd like to contact us about anything we talked about tonight, or anything in general, or just tell us shut the hell up. We have an email address. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at wonderpodonline, or you can follow me on Twitter at origim, or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Keogh, Jonkehoe,
or you can send a carrier pigeon named Bob with a message to Glacinator, care of some Louisiana university that I can't exactly remember the name of. Yep. Until episode 136, I am Bruce McGee. I'm out of here to see if Princess Peach really was Cortana. See ya, people.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.